Stop jumping on me. Ah, why are you doing that?
Having a bad dog day?
Rex, come back here.
From police dogs to pet dogs, from potty training to pet peeves, number one best-selling author and 30-year canine trainer Andy Falco knows how to get to the meat of what's eating your dog. This is Falco Canine Dog Talk,
the show that helps you and your dog create a relationship of love and respect.
What a good boy. Good heel, Rex. I love you, Rex.
And now here's your host, Andy Falco.
Thank you once again, Christopher. Really appreciate that. Yes, this is Andy over at the Falco Canines Dog Talk radio show, and we are so happy to have you. I just happen to be taping this particular episode during the holidays, and it brings up a few things that I want to talk about on that regard. And I also want to talk about pit bulls just a little bit. I also want to talk about trainers, and how you find a good trainer, how you select a good trainer, and about electronic collars just a little bit. So I got a couple, I guess you would say, controversial topics I want to talk about. But before I go into that, let me give you the phone number that you can call if you have a question from me and Falco Canines Dog Talk, or one of our experts that we may be able to search and hunt down for your question. So here you go.
Got a dog question you'd like answered on air? Call the Canine Line at 714-798-9961. That's 714-798-9961. And now, back to Falco Canine Dog Talk.
Great. All right, let's just talk about the holidays just for a second. And there's really not a lot to say other than boarding your dog during the holidays. If you're having a bunch of people over that your dog's not used to having, that is really the answer. Finding a good reputable place to take your dog and have them board somewhere. That's Maverick here in the background. Since we record this at our studios at the kennels, you're bound to hear some barking dogs occasionally. And yes, he's being boarded here at our facility. But what you need to, and it's feeding time. That's why they're barking. It's not just something they do all day long. They're getting ready to get fed. So you'll hear them suddenly stop barking, and that's because they're eating. But as I was saying, when your dog is in your home and suddenly there's 15, 20, 30 people at your house that he's only knows a small portion of them, and there's children, there's running around, there's noise, there's radios playing, just consider the stress that your dog may be going through. Now, there's two things that can happen. You have one thing that can happen is the dog can be so fearful that the dog will go into another room, hide underneath a bed, go in the backyard, and just stay away. But that doesn't mean that they're not feeling stress. It doesn't mean that your dog's system isn't going through some very stressful times and can cause diarrhea and just, you know, uncomfortable period of time for your dog, whether it's for just a couple hours or several hours. Just consider that maybe in a kennel facility, a boarding facility, or even a friend's house, that it may be a better option for your particular dog. All right, so just consider that option when your dog is that fearful that they have to hide from all the activity. you may have a dog who actually decides that, you know, I need to protect myself from all these people or from this child who's suddenly pulling my tail that I've never met before, or somebody steps on the dog's paw. Or maybe they feel that there's some ground that they need to protect or some object they need to protect. And you put your dog in a position that they will possibly fail. And you need to make sure and keep that into consideration, that potential of biting somebody or somebody falling over your dog can suddenly turn your friend or your family member into adversary in regard to who's going to make the payments on that particular medical bill, whether it's from the dog or from the injury that the human received because of that engagement with your dog. You also may have a dog who, just becomes really excited and happy and in that excitement knocks somebody over. And so I guess there's three options. You have your dog that's going to run and hide and just feel stressed and get sick. You're going to have your dog who feels like it needs to protect itself and may harm somebody. And then you have your dog who's so happy that, you know, in that activity of jumping around and excitement may also harm somebody or get hurt in the process. So just consider those things that, just to avoid that the boarding facility option or a friend at their house or in their backyard might be a better option for your dog. All right, so that's just something for you to think about. The next thing I want to talk about is the issue of pit bulls. Now, we get them in our training facility from time to time, whether it is in our group training or board and train. And, of course, we did this show with Cesar Millan called Love My Pit Bull that's been airing on National Geographic that shows every so often that, we have a history with pit bulls here. And it's mostly because they are a little bit of a unique breed of dog that can get into trouble, not necessarily because they are more aggressive than other dogs, because there's other dogs that have possibly as much opportunity or a propensity to become aggressive, say like Chihuahuas, who probably become aggressive several times more often than a pit bull. But the unique thing about the pit bull is that their bite is so strong that it does cause a lot more damage and sometimes even death. That particular issue is unique with the dog. There are some training things that are unique to the pit bull that I have found that make them a little bit more difficult for most trainers. Now, considering that we get them all the time, it's a little bit more normal for us. But for some trainers, it may be something they're just not aware of or don't have the enough experience with that type of personality. And the personality is that it's just a little bit quirky in that when you give them a correction, for instance, for aggression, that if your timing is good with most dogs, they understand that that aggression that they're displaying is what they're getting corrected for. In other words, that when they decide to growl or bark or lunge at a person, say for instance a German Shepherd, and we give the dog a leash correction or a verbal correction, the dog understands that it's that action is what that is that they're getting corrected for. And in turn, they will realize that that is something that we don't want them to do, and they begin to stop or hold back that particular option. Now, in a pit bull, I have often seen where that correction enhances the aggression. Now, since we can't get in the dog's brain, and you're going to hear a lot of different opinions from different people, and they're going to say that they're right, and there's going to be trainers that listen to this and probably question what I'm about to tell you. But I'm going to tell you something that comes from my perspective. So you got to just kind of take it for what it's worth, coming from me and my experience. And what I choose to believe, and again, because I'm not a scientist and can't get into the dog's brain necessarily, is sometimes the dog will, in a sense, believe that the correction is being caused by what it is they're showing their aggression towards. So if they're showing their aggression towards another person and they get corrected, they will tend to blame that other thing. And so thereby causing them to have more fear or more anger or more aggressive behavior towards that person. So you got to understand the subtle difference. Now, I'm not sure if subtle is actually even the right word. Just understanding that that's different than a dog understanding that they're being corrected because of their behavior, as opposed to a dog who when they get the correction, they're blaming what it is they're showing their aggression towards. That is a distinct difference and an important difference you need to understand, because you could actually be making your problems worse. So if you continually put a dog into the position to fail, which we do in training. So let's say, for instance, we don't want the dog to jump. We put the dog in the position to fail by patting ourselves on the chest, thereby having the dog jump up, and then we correct. All right, so we put the dog in the position to fail so we can show the dog that's not what we want. And in turn, we are training the dog that when you see somebody pat on your chest, you're actually supposed to sit down or put all four paws on the ground. All right, so we reverse whatever it is that that dog believes that patting on the chest means through the correction. All right, so if we are trying to do that with the pit bull and we try to put the dog in the position to fail, in other words, bring him in front of a person that he does not like, he's afraid of, or wants to make sure and show that he is angry at or his aggression towards, and we put that dog in a position to fail, and we do that continuously and correct, we can now be enhancing that dog's aggression towards people by continually putting them in that position and correcting them for it. Because every time we do that, we're telling the dog that that person is more and more evil and they need to be feared even more, or they need their aggression to be enhanced because what they're doing now isn't making that situation go away. All right, so we have to be careful on what it is we're doing. We need to change what it is we're doing. And now I know that maybe some of you are saying, okay, so what's the answer? What can we do? This podcast isn't long enough, at least in the format I'm doing now, to explain how we do that differently. But you need to consider that is the important part of this particular message. Consider that if you see that you're not gaining any ground, in other words, the dog is not stopping or reducing its aggression towards something, then you're in that situation where you are enhancing the aggression through your correction. And you may need to stop and look at other options. Other options are changing the correction to where it's something the dog understands that is easier for the dog to understand that they're not supposed to be doing that. So you can change it sometimes going from a pinch collar, for instance, what we see often on pit bulls, and taking and going to more of a flat collar correction, or a losing ground correction, or a timeout correction. Maybe going to that option may be a better option because there isn't compulsion or pain or discomfort associated with that as much as, say, a pinch collar. Maybe a reward system may be appropriate for a pit bull that really has a lot of food desire, or a strong desire for a toy, and using the toy as an option and going to a reward system. So looking at something different. So don't always believe that correcting a dog for bad behavior is going to be your solution, is the moral of this story, especially when working with pit bulls. All right, so this leads me into my next topic, and that happens to be electronic collars. And I want to separate. So make sure that you understand that this is a separate discussion than pit bulls, because electronic collars can be misused with a pit bull very easily. And I don't want to fog what it was we just talked about with pit bulls and what we're going to talk about with electronic collars. So take away your thought process right now with the pit bulls. And I just want to look at electronic collars separately as a separate discussion. All right. So many years ago, I was forced as a police officer to use electronic collars. And I'm talking several years ago when the remote collar and the collar, or not the remote collar, where the remote control, the transmitter and the collar were such that you could not control the intensity with the remote. The only thing the remote did was send a signal to the collar to start the stimulation. But you weren't able to control the level of stimulation with the remote. So back then, they had these things called pins, and the pins were the things that you put on the collar that would change the intensity. There'd be red pins, blue pins, green pins, yellow pins, and orange pins, I think. And you would change those pins according to the intensity based on what it was you were going to do with the dog. And so in our police dogs, if we were doing bite work and we wanted the dog to release, in many cases, we would be on, I believe, the orange pin and the red pin because the dog's pain tolerance would be up. And so we'd need a higher stimulation for that particular dog. And in obedience, you'd be on a blue or a green pin because those were lower intensity and there wouldn't be as much stimulation. The dog's pain tolerance would be lower. All right. So that's all fun and dandy. However, in police dog training, we would go quickly from obedience to bite work, and the handlers wouldn't take the time to change the pins. And therefore, you would be on a red pin and doing obedience, you'd give a correction, and of course, you'd send the dog through the roof because the intensity was too high for what it is for what the dog was doing. And it was causing all kinds of problems. So I, at that time, decided that the e-collars were horrible tools and needed to be banned from existence. It wasn't until later on that I got tasked to help a lady who had MS, and she had a dog that was knocking her down, and when it did, she wasn't able to get up. And as a matter of fact, the dog was, the golden retriever was nearly drowning her in drool as she, as the dog licked her face, because she thought that the dog thought that the lady was getting on the ground and playing with her, when in fact the lady was trying to get up and stop being licked in the face, and all this extra activity brought more stimulation to the dog and caused the dog to even lick harder and jump more actively on the lady when she was on the ground. And it turned into a really, really bad problem. And so, realizing that I wasn't going to be able to train this lady like I train most people, using a leash and collar, whether it was a choke chain or a pinch collar or a flat collar, that and even a click and treat, excuse me, was not going to work and be something that was going to be effective for her. And so I left my first appointment with her and began to think, wow, the only thing I can see her doing is pushing a button, and that would bring me back to using an electronic collar. And that would be something that I thought that I would never do, that I swore off the electronic collar. And of course, I didn't have any choice. I had to give it a shot. And so I revisited the electronic collar, and by now, they had systems where you could change the stimulation through the remote. And began to find out that actually this electronic collar thing actually might be a very useful tool, and in the right hands, and if you set the foundation for the dog a little bit more firmly with the dog, so the dog understood a little bit more about the collar, how it could actually control the collar by performing the correct behavior and thereby turning off the electronics, the electronic stimulation, it actually could be a very good tool. And in doing so, in learning a new technique with this collar, I was able to help this lady, and she was able to keep this dog at home, and it became a very useful tool for her and her situation. And as I continued to learn more about the collar, I actually learned that the electronic collar could actually be a more humane tool in the right hands, and if the foundation is set more effectively with the dog, it actually was a great tool. It took a lot of power and pressure that the dog could feel from the handler and take it and actually wash it away and actually be a clearer tool for the dog. So what I wanted to talk about in this particular part of our segment is that the electronic collar, when in the right hands, when used properly, when the foundation is set properly, that it is a very effective tool. Now, there are a couple rules or a frame, what's the word I'm looking for? There's a few different ways of using the electronic collar that one I believe is horrible and one that I think is very effective. Now there is one system of using the collar where they use the momentary button. The momentary button is one where when you push it, it just instantaneously sends a signal of stimulation, only lasts for a second, actually probably less than a second. And so when you push it, that's all you get. You get bzzzt, and that's it. There's another one, a button that you use, and it's continuous. And when you push it down and hold it down, the stimulation continues on for up to, I believe it's 8 seconds. It could be 10, it could be less, but I'm not sure. I should know, but there's collars that are different. And so it's right around 8 seconds. And so I don't use the pulse or the momentary like other people do. Now there's people that use it and they just push, and then when the dog stops, they stop pushing. I think that's confusing for the dog, and I don't like it very often. I don't like it very much, I'm sorry, because it's not, I don't think it is effective for dogs. Dogs need to have clear, concise training for them to understand it, and I don't think using that system is clear and concise. Now, I use the continuation. So the dog is performing a bad behavior. Say the dog is pulling on the leash and tugging on the leash, and I want the dog to come back to a heel position. So what I do is I use continuous on a very low level. I hit the button. I hold it down, And as long as the dog is doing the behavior that I don't want, I hold down the button. Now, when the dog realizes that it's doing something wrong, the dog has learned that it is in control of the collar and it knows how to turn off the collar or turn off the stimulation by coming into the position that I want it to come into, and that would be the heel position. So the dog is at the end of the leash and pulling. I push the button, hold it down. The dog slows down and comes into the heel position. Now I release the stimulation. And thereby the dog learns that it is in control of the collar. And then if you use a low level, the dog can stay clear-headed and the dog understands completely what is going on. If you go too high, then of course now it becomes about the pain and the dog stops learning and the dog is confused. All right, so by setting a foundation early on, I teach the dog that it is in control of the collar, that the stimulation is only a message that I'm sending to him or her, and the dog needs to respond accordingly to whatever it is I'm doing. And usually this type of training gets the response I'm looking for. Now, there are some dogs that the electronics is completely confusing, so no matter what you do, it can be confusing, and you need to understand that and not use the electronic collar on dogs like that. All right, so the electronic collar is not a solution for every dog. That it is a solution for a large portion of the dog community, but there are those dogs that it's just not an option, just like the pinch collar may not be an option for some dogs, just like the choke chain may not be the option for some dogs, just like click and treat is not an option for some dogs. Every dog has its tool that's going to be more effective than the next. All right, so I hope this explanation, electronic collar, didn't confuse things more for you. Hopefully you understand that it is a different tool that you need professional training from a professional dog trainer who knows how to use the collar effectively. And if you get into a situation where they're using that momentary and telling you to push the button over and over and over again, that we don't believe that that is a good option. I think it's very confusing and that you should look for a trainer who does not use that particular type of training. All right, now the last segment of this particular broadcast is, how do you find a good trainer? What is it you look for in a trainer? And there's always this thing that I get called, or that people ask me when we get calls or ask one of our folks that answer the phone, and that is your dog trainer certified? Now, I'm here to tell you right now something you may not know, and that is there is no governing body for dog trainers in the government, in the world, that is a standard that all dog trainers have to go through in order to get certified. There is no certification that, again, that governs any dog trainer. Now, there's professional dog trainers like myself who have certification processes that they're certified on our process of training, on our system of training with love and respect. But that is just our system, and you'll get a certificate for attending and showing a proficiency in being able to do that. But that is it. There is no governing body, no state standard. And so what I tell people that they need to look for in a trainer is a trainer that knows several methods of training, and they don't just show you just one. So you go to a dog trainer, the only method they use is the electronic collar. You probably need to make another choice because they won't have the options you need. Again, if you have a dog that just doesn't respond well to the electronic collar, they're going to continue to try to use that tool, whether it's working or not, whether it's causing problems or not. They're going to continue to try to use the tool because that's the only one that they use. You need a dog trainer that knows several options. For instance, for Falco Canine Academy, all of our trainers need to know how to use a flat collar, a choke chain, a pinch collar, a martingale, a click and treat, a toy reward system, a food reward system, and all the systems in between. And so that way, if we get into a situation where your dog is not responding to the system we've selected for your particular situation, that we have an option that we can problem solve and say, you know what, I just realized that your dog is coming with some baggage possibly, and this option is not going to work for your dog. And so that is really, really important. Just know that there's no certification for dog trainers, that your dog trainer that you select needs to know all the different options that there are that are available to them so they can have problem solving capabilities.
and that you get along with them. That is another thing, that you'd get along with your trainer. If you don't want to go to your trainer because you don't like them personally, or you don't like the way they treat you, or the, like the way they treat your dog, then it's probably not going to work because you're not going to listen to them. And that is going to be huge. The personalities need to somewhat mesh. That doesn't mean to say that you need to have a trainer that agrees with you all the time, because that's not going to help you either. But when they disagree, that you understand what it is they're saying, and they're not treating you like a little child, that they actually have the ability to train human beings in addition to training dogs. And that would be my last tip, that you want a dog trainer that is a human trainer, not necessarily just a dog trainer. When I select trainers to work for us, I want human trainers first, and in most cases, dog trainers second. Now, there are some dog trainers that have come to us that we've been able to teach them how to be human trainers, but I want to always select somebody that's going to be able to make an impact with the human being far more than they necessarily can make an impact with the dog. All right, so we want people... and you want somebody that's going to be able to be a human trainer just as much as they're going to be a dog trainer. All right, there you go. I hope this episode is helpful to you, and it gives you the information you are looking for in those areas that we discussed. And again, don't forget to call that our canine dog talk phone number so that you can get your question to us so that we can answer and make sure that our episodes are good for you and have the information that you are looking for. All right, so that's this episode for Falco Canine's Dog Talk. Have a great holiday, and we will see you at the next one. Take care. Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Do you have a love-hate relationship with your dog? Learn how to change that into a relationship of love and respect with help from Falco Canine Academy.
Get your free training report at falcocanineacademy.com.
Thanks for listening to Falco Canine Dog Talk,
the show that helps you and your dog create a relationship of love and respect.
If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address at www.falcocanineacademy.com.
And like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Falco Canine Academy.
Follow us on twitter.com/Falco Canine Academy.
And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Falco143.
And remember, if you've got questions for Andy, call the K9 line at 714-798-9961. That's 714-798-9961.
This is a production of Falco Enterprises Incorporated. All rights reserved.